Welcome to Crime Wire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts, along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crimes to find answers and seek justice. The Crime Wire team, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author. This is Marcy Milano, violence expert and author. On top of the crime, at the top of the game. For information, news, and most importantly, justice. Our investigative website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or a family member and you'd like to Crime Wire team information on an unsolved or suspicious death case, or you'd like to be considered for a segment on a case for a future show, please email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com.
Good evening, and this evening we're going to be talking about a case of Nikkei Laley out of Gwinnett County, Georgia. In July of 2011, there was trouble in the Laley home with calls to the police, arguments, and insinuation of past violence in the marriage of Matthew and Nikkei Laley. Nikkei went missing on July 8th, leaving behind her purse, keys, credit cards, and most importantly, her children. Her husband said there was an argument and she had simply walked out of the house. A week later, on July 16th, in the hot Georgia summer, her decomposing remains were found less than a mile from her home, completely naked, face down in a shallow grave covered by leaves. Her clothes have never been found. Interestingly, her husband Matthew had already filed for divorce, citing abandonment. How in a week's time he knew she wasn't coming back is a major question. Could it be because he had spy gadgets everywhere, including surveillance cameras, tape recordings of all phone conversations, key loggers on all computers, and trackers on all cell phones? Seems he would have a pretty good idea where his wife was headed, considering the lengths he had taken to keep track of her. Named a suspect in the murder of Nikkei, Matthew has not been arrested and no charges have been filed. He has since taken two of the couple's young children and moved them out of state, isolating them from Nikkei's family.
Who does that sound like, Denny?
Pardon me?
I mean, all these cases that we have, who does that sound like? And for the listeners, this past week, just yesterday, Clay Waller admitted to murdering his wife, Jackie Waller, on June 1st, 2011. They haven't located her body as of yet, but he's being held on a million dollars bond. I mean, these guys think that they can get away with this. And how many cases in your career have you seen like this?
There's a lot of them, you know, and you're right, Susan, because you have to wonder when this repetition, don't these guys realize, I mean, don't they ever read the newspapers or listen to the news? If they think they're coming up with some novel idea that's going to snow everybody, it just isn't going to work. But they continue to try it, and it's absolutely it's amazing. I don't know. I don't know if it's arrogance or stupidity, but they keep going.
But yet, too, in this case, and we're going to talk about it. You know, tonight we have both her daughter, Alex, as well as sister, Amy. And the difference in this is that the crime scene just screams foul ball in every way possible. And all of these cases that we see take so long, it seems like, for justice. They have everything. They know what's happened, and yet they don't make an arrest on these cases. If that person was the last one to see them, if you're on the job right now, Denny, and that person is the last person to see them, in the olden days, wouldn't they just round up like cattle and say, everybody go in, we'll figure this out?
Yep.
Happening now?
Exactly, Susan, exactly. The lack of, well, apparently things have changed a lot over the years, is my assumption, because like you say, there was a time when people would have thought that, look, let's get, like you say, we'll get everybody in, we'll talk to everybody, we'll figure this out, and we're going to make an arrest, if possible. Here, when you have what seems to be very clear indications, and take a look at the Powell case, you know what I mean? Now that everybody's dead in the case, including the children, they're saying, well, there might have been probable cause after all to have done something. Well,
but they have evidence, you know, with Susan Powell, they just come out with this now a couple weeks ago that she left words, written statements saying if something happens to me, and then she said also to keep Stephen Powell, the father, away from her children. She was afraid. So she wrote all her fears. All this stuff comes out after the fact, after the kids are blown up on February 5th of this year, and you find the stuff in a warehouse or a storage unit, a bloody blanket, other items. And then the police had this all this time, since 09 on Susan Cox Powell, had her written words. Why wasn't it enough? And then you have a prosecutor in the next county over in Pierce County who says, I would have done X, Y, Z. And it's not to criticize him, but it's a bad day for beating your chest. You're obviously running for a higher office, and it's wrong.
Yeah.
If you would have done that, then why couldn't you step over on the other county and just offered assistance, done something? Because, Denny, they had all this information. Just like in Nikki's case that we're going to talk about tonight, they have all this information, and yet they're not making an arrest. And that's the silence in these crimes.
And, Susan, you raise another good point about the prosecutor in Washington State about the Powell case. I've been involved with several. I know you have been also, of cases where everybody, these police agencies and prosecutors and so forth, are so turf conscious that, and I'm saying this because it virtually is true, someone can get away with murder before another agency will say, hey, wait a minute, another agency that could have jurisdiction legally, well, before they will come in, when they see a botched investigation or a mishandled investigation or an incompetent investigation, unless they're invited in by the handling agency, even if they're a state agency and it's a county case or something like that where they would have jurisdiction, they won't do it unless they're invited in. And so they will sit on the sidelines knowing that a killer or killers are out there and are going to get away, but they won't do it because it maybe isn't politically correct. They don't want to ruffle anybody's feathers. They're not going to embarrass a sister agency and make anybody look bad. So they'd rather, I don't say they'd rather, but the policy seems to be, we'll let things slide. If they need our help, they'll ask for it. Other than that, don't call us because we're not going to do anything.
How often did I jump up and down? And there were people on this show and other ones who told me, now, Susan, and I said, that's ho-dunk out there. They don't know what they're doing, and they don't understand what they have to put together. And here they had it all along,
yeah.
And it comes out after the fact, and that you put these two children in danger from day one. Who? And then it also comes out that the child, I don't know if it was Charles or, you know, 5 and 7 years old, they disclosed pretty immediately that mommy goes camping, or she's brought to camping, and doesn't come back with them. Steve Powell, the father of Josh Powell, cannot account for his time during that time. And again, all of those things are brought up. And it's not to pull people's pants down. It's to say, if you don't get on these times, if you don't see these guys date other women, their children are in danger, as in all these cases. You've got the father of two girls out somewhere in Vermont or New Hampshire, wherever he's at. Matthew, who was married to Nikki, and those two children. What kind of danger might they be in? And it's not to say that you compare that to any other case. It's to say that that's reality. If you kill one, what are you going to do to the other? And what does it say about parents? Are you that cold and self-serving that you don't want to be around for your kids? It's better to have one parent than no parent at all. That you can't get away with this. At some point, they're going to be caught. And, you know, I always say that these guys listen, and they listen well. And I think now it's time for us to introduce our two guests because they're sitting silently, and they shouldn't be.
Yes.
Hi, Susan.
Is that Alex?
Well, yes. Alex and Amy with us tonight.
And Amy. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. You know, it's going to be particularly hard for you, Alex. Your mom, you know, we've got this day coming up. And mm-hmm. This is the first one without her.
Yes.
And it's the first of many. And as you're preparing, you're in second year college?
It's my second year of college.
It's your second year of college.
Yes,
I mean, it's pretty tough. Every day is tough, but this makes it tougher, doesn't it? When everybody's getting prepared to meet their mom for lunch or dinner or buy something, you're not going to be able to do that this year.
It's really difficult. Like, I work in retail, and I work in a girls' store, and every day girls and their moms come in to shop, and it just breaks my heart because it's always mommy this, mommy that, and I know that I'll never have that opportunity again. So it's really difficult day in and day out. Daily experiences are just really difficult.
And the same thing for you, Amy. You know, as her aunt, you're doing a lot of things to, you know, it's not make up for it, but, you know, you're all she has now, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I try and be there for Alex as much as I can. You know, I would never be so arrogant as to try and take the place of her mom because no one could ever do that. But I try to be there for her as much as possible and, you know, help her out with school wherever I can, you know, that kind of thing. I just co-signed her apartment for her, you know, stuff that ordinarily her mom would be doing. I've tried to step in and do that wherever I can. But, you know, it's been really hard for all of us.
Tell us about your sister.
Oh, she was my best friend. You know, I mean, she and I used to talk almost every day on the phone. If one of us was sitting in traffic, we'd call the other one, you know, and go, hey, just wanted to yak at you, and we'd just talk about whatever. And that's the hardest thing in the world, because I live in Atlanta, and Atlanta rivals L.A. for traffic. So sitting in traffic every day, I'm reminded that I don't have her to call anymore. And it's really hard. But, I mean, she and I, we used to laugh. She was funny. I mean, she was so alive. And if you had told me a year ago that this would have happened to her, I don't know that I would have believed it just because she was so full of spunk. You know, I wouldn't have thought that she would allow this to happen to her, but, you know, here we are.
Describe some of the things that, you know, leading up to, I know that the last date that you saw her was the 26th of June, and
mm-hmm.
you had spent the day doing girly things with both her girls, her, you. You went and got pedicures and manicures.
Right.
But there were incidences before that led up to disturbing situations where you were concerned for her safety?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 3 years prior to her death, she called me up one night and said that she and her husband had gotten in a big fight and that she, you know, she got in her car and drove off and that she was done, her marriage was over, and that he had pushed her up against the wall and put his hands around her throat. And I said at that moment, I said, okay, you're done. Come to my house right now. You know, don't go back there. But she said, no, I can't because the girls are still there, so I have to go back. But, you know, and I said, okay, I don't want you calling me tomorrow and telling me you're working things out because, you know, now escalated to a physical level, and that's unacceptable. And she said, okay, I'm not going to, you know, don't worry. And then the next day, Matthew called me and said that they were working things out and that if I tried to interfere in their marriage, that he would make sure I never spoke to my sister again. So, she and I never really discussed it again after that. You know, it was kind of like the elephant in the room. You know, And he recorded everything. He listened to all the phone conversations. He tracked her. He always knew exactly where she was. So, I mean, I was afraid of saying anything else about it. I did fax her stuff to her office. I did research on, you know, domestic abuse and abusive relationships and how to know when you're in one, that kind of thing. And I faxed it to her at her office, which was, like, the only place that I could think of that he might not be watching. And she said, you know, I called her at her desk, and she said she'd gotten it. And I said, just promise me you will read that and take it seriously. And,
but she didn't.
You know, she didn't. And I honestly, I didn't know what else to do, Susan, you know. And I will forever fight with myself that I should have done more, because between Alex and myself, we were the only ones who really knew how serious the abuse really was. And, you know, Alex, you know, she's a kid. I mean, sweetie, no offense, you're a grown lady now, but you were a kid when this was going on. So you what could you do, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was the only one that could have done anything, and I didn't do enough. So, you know, I will forever wrestle with that.
And Denny, don't you find this odd too? I mean, she's a breadwinner, Nikki. She's the one that earned all the income. And in your thinking, do you think that she should have walked away?
Yeah. It's very tough. And I understand not being in that situation personally. It's probably easy to sit back and say, oh, I should have done this or she should have done that. But as an outsider looking in, you have to wonder, you know, obviously, know what we know now, she should have. She should have that night that, you know, she left the house after he had grabbed her by the throat, instead of trying to work things out. I mean, it's too bad that the message that he delivered that night of the violence he was capable of didn't stick. And if there had been other examples, too, apparently, of this and this obsession with tracking her movements and... it seems like there were a lot of signs there, and you know, it's if only, what we've got to say is she would have acted in at that point, who knows, but not being in her situation, it's tough to say. You know, we can only look back now and say, if only this would have happened. But
right.
Susan, how many women or cases do we talk to that are very similar in that aspect, where the warning signs are there and there's maybe a temporary breakup or a threat to break up or whatever, but it never really goes forward, and eventually we're talking to relatives on this show, and it's a very similar pattern where when it was possible to escape, perhaps, the escape wasn't made, that opportunity was were allowed to pass, and you know
they don't have the support. You know they're
yeah.
they're and they might think that they do, or they think that they can't handle it. They're embarrassed. I mean, Alex, you saw a lot of stuff. You know, when your mom married him, did you get along with this guy?
No, we didn't get along from the get-go at all. I mean, it was just between him and I, it was a terrible relationship from the beginning.
What was your house like? You know, what was the environment like in the house? So he moved, your mom gets married. How old are you, about 13 at the time?
When they got married, I was around 4.
Okay, you were around 4.
They were together when I was 4, and they got married. They were in Mississippi. I don't know, I could have been 9, 10 maybe. I don't know, Amy would know more than I would.
Did the situation change for you when you were married, or when they were married, or when he moved in? Did your regimen, did your lifestyle with your mom abruptly changed? Was he giving orders?
Just,
how was he?
He, you know, I think one of his biggest tactics with her was to isolate her, and he just slowly, from the time I was 4, slowly isolated her from her family and tried to keep her from me. Anytime I spent time with her, he had to be there too. I wasn't allowed to spend alone time with her, and the time in the house was just, it was terrible. I mean, he was verbally abusive 24/7 to her. You know, and any time that I needed something, I had to go through him instead of going through my mom. And the biggest tactic with him, I think, and the biggest tactic with many abusers is their ability to isolate their spouse from being able to feel like they're cared or loved for at all, even in their own home, because he successfully isolated me from my mom and to the point that we couldn't even communicate in our own home.
Right, like the girly day was to give you some time with her. Like, that's why we manufactured that, you know.
And,
because,
you know, like, that's so key because, you know, my aunt had to go out of her way to construct this ability for us to go get our nails done just for me to see my mom. You know, it was
talk about the inside house, though. What happened to all of the interior doors in the home?
He took all the doors off. There were no doors. Like, he took them all off.
And did he say why he did that?
No. I have no idea.
Danny, have you ever heard of that?
No. I've heard, you know, maybe taking the door off to a child's room or something because the kids would lock themselves in or that type of thing, but never anything like this where they remove all the doors and all the doors in the house. She was saying that the hair started to rise on the back of my neck. That's almost creepy.
He takes every door off, and so that means that you can't see me. I can see you. That no place in that house was private. No place in that house. He wanted to see every single thing that was going on.
We also had video cameras in the house. Like, there was a video camera above the entertainment center in the living room. So if you were sitting on the couch watching TV, you were being watched on video camera. You were being watched by a video camera. Like, you could see the video camera as you're watching TV, knowing that you're being watched by surveillance.
Danny, that's beyond not good, not healthy.
Oh, God. It's weird. It doesn't even begin to describe it. Is anybody ever know what the motivation was for this? Obviously, he had some kind of hang-up. He wanted to control, certainly, and know everybody's movements, control their movements. It was said a minute ago he didn't allow any personal communication. He was monitoring every movement. And that's very odd. Does anybody know what was behind that, what motivated him?
Aside from the fact that he's a nut job.
Yeah.
I mean, he was always like that. I mean, when he first moved in with us, because Nikki and Alex lived with me when Nikki and Alex's dad divorced. She and I moved in together. I was in college. And then all of a sudden she tells me, I've got this friend who's going to come stay with us for a little while. And then he drives his great big creepy van up to our house and is moving in. Well, the minute he moved in, we lived in a little duplex on the east side of Athens, and there was a couple that lived next door to us, and it was actually a single mom and her dad was disabled, and he delivered newspapers for a living. So he got up at, 3 o'clock in the morning and went, wheeled himself out to the car and went to work, because that's what time you get up to work if you're delivering newspapers. Well, Matt was convinced that he was going to steal stuff out of his van. So he would go out and stand there with his, arms across his chest, watching this guy in a wheelchair go to his car, to the point where the man finally came up to him and was like, dude, I don't want anything from your van. You can go back inside. I mean, he was just, I'm a psychologist, so clearly I can't diagnose anything, but it was paranoia is the word I would use just as a layperson,
Yeah, that was on the tip of my tongue as you were talking. Was he married previously, Matthew?
Yes.
Any problems there that you're aware of?
I heard that when he and his ex-wife got a divorce, that she had to take out a restraining order against him, and she hired like 6 big, huge guys to help her move her stuff because he had threatened her. I haven't spoken to her directly. That's just what I heard.
Do you know if the police interviewed her?
I don't know.
The police did much of anything except for, Denny, when they went into the house, didn't they recover over 50,000 files from the hard drive and cameras that he tried to delete?
Yeah. Yep, they sure did.
That was his surveillance videos and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And he had key loggers on all the computers. He had every single thing known to man. I mean, this guy had time on his hands. He didn't work. He was a home, stay-at-home daddy. Mommy was out being the breadwinner. But yet everything about her was controlled. She couldn't do anything.
Right. Well, to the point that his ex-wife's name is Joanne. That's Rebecca's middle name. Their youngest daughter, her middle name is Joanne. Who names their kid after their ex-wife? That's just weird.
And one of the calls for 911, when she calls shortly before she dies, Denny, it says, you know, she's calling for help. He gets on the phone and says, I'm recording everything. I'm Matthew. I'm her husband. Is there, a problem here? And that's it. It's let go. You know, it's not dealt with. Nobody sends anybody out for a wellness check to the home. Nothing. And again,
well, they did go out. They sent officers out that evening, but they just came and talked to them. They said they let each of them have their, you know, say their piece separately, and then they left. Basically, because there weren't any visible bruises or anything on my sister, they didn't do anything.
How could she, with Lurch over there on the other side, just kind of looking at her, you know, like, don't even try it. I mean, there's
mm-hmm.
such an intimidation factor there. There is this, you know, she must have done something just prior to her death to set him off to the point where he tells her, you'll never see your kids again. She knows he needs it. She knows, doesn't she, Alex, by the way that she's spoken to, that whatever he says, he follows through. Was that the case when you lived there, you saw happen?
I mean, just, you know, for the prime example of that, I chose to move out when I was 16, and he looked at me in front of my mom and said, you know, you cannot come back here without police escort. And from the time I was 16 to the time of her death, I maybe saw her a handful of times in person. And when I did see her, he was most likely there. And he always, I mean, if she was told that, you know, like when I moved out, I wasn't allowed to see her anymore. And like that was the case. Like I didn't see her. I saw her maybe three times without him. And one of those was because, you know, Amy put it together and we were with the rest of the family. And then I saw her once again because I moved into my new apartment and she came. And when she did come, he brought a computer and she brought a computer with her and said, oh, this is for you. And it was, you know, she was like, you know, Matt wanted to give it to you, and it has trackers all in that computer.
Where are the
photos
about a month before she dies? Who's got them? Do you have them, or do you have them, Amy?
I have them.
I think you have
copies of them also, don't you, Alex?
I do. I have them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that I have them. We need them. You know, Denny, I'm thinking here there might be a wrongful death case that Alex and her sister can file.
Well,
no.
And we've got to be within
in civil
statute.
Court.
Yeah, absolutely.
He doesn't have to be charged, so if he's listening or will be listening to the show, and again, you know, I've said before, he's more than welcome to be a guest and to have no problem with that on any of the shows that we do. Because, you know, if he is so innocent, why did he run? I think that it's important that we start with, you know, so it's the 26th of June. It is the last time. Is it the last time you see your sister alive, Amy?
Yes.
And so you go to this pedicure and you spend the day together and you have a great time. And then are things wrong? When do you start not being able to talk to her?
I didn't hear from her again after that, almost hardly at all. I texted her once on July 6th when I was out roller skating with her kids. I had my kids and her kids. I had taken them all roller skating, and I sent her a text that said, I'm roller skating with your kids, blah, blah, blah. And she said, haha, you know, we just had a little text conversation, but it was all of two statements, and that was it. And the next thing I knew, I got a call on July 11th from Matthew saying, have you talked to Nikki? And I said, no, why? What's going on? And he goes, I don't know. Why don't you tell me? And I said, I don't know, you psycho. I've been in Connecticut since Friday. But what's going on? And he said, oh, well, Nikki's missing. She's been gone for 2 days.
Okay, wait,
and,
stop.
Mm-hmm.
Denny, you have the timeline there.
Yes.
July 11th. They talk. What happens after that?
July 11th, they had their problem. And then July 16th, they found the body less than a mile from the house.
But he filed for divorce in between
that. He filed for divorce for abandonment on the grounds of abandonment prior to the body being found. So within a couple of days after she allegedly went missing, he started court proceedings, started the paperwork at least for an abandonment grounds for divorce.
Okay, and former investigator, what does that say to you?
He knew she wasn't coming back.
And he filed for divorce.
And which is probably stupid because it just certainly jumps out at anybody who's looking at this. I mean, you say, wait a minute. Can I ask a couple of questions just so I'm not confused? The police, when the police were informed that she was missing, did they launch any kind of a attempt to locate her? Does anybody know how they handled that? Did they take a missing persons report? Or did they just say, well, maybe she'll show up. If she's not back in a week, call us? Or how did that come down?
The day that I called her cell phone and Matt picked up the phone and said, you know, where's your mother? You know where she is. I immediately, an hour later, called the police. After talking to family, called the police and filed a missing person report, and they told me, you know, they're really nonchalant about it, and they said, you know, it's going to take 24 hours to process, and we can't do anything about it for another 24 hours, blah, 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 blah. You know, most of these cases that, you know, they've just left the house to breathe, and, you know, that was all they said to me, and then they never contacted me again. I had to continue to contact the police. They never would contact me or anything.
Are you saying that he didn't report her? You're the one that reported her?
As far as I know, I was told he reported her. I don't know. Like, I don't have the report where he reported her, but I reported her that day before he reported
her. He did not report her missing until after my father did.
Yeah.
My dad called the police and reported her missing. And then while my dad was on the phone with the police giving them the report, Matt called in to report her missing, and this was 2 days after she disappeared.
So she was gone for 2 days without, you know, her cell phone, without anything, basically, and he doesn't bother to report it.
Right. Well, but he called his personal trainer to let them know that he wouldn't be in the gym 2 days later because his wife was missing.
Well, that's good. At least he reported it to somebody, huh?
Right.
I'm being sarcastic. The other thing is, do we know the cause and manner of death? Do we know how she died?
Well, why don't we go back, I think, go back and talk about what you guys do for 5 days and that amount of time, and then how you, in the condition you find the body.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Connecticut for most of it, so we organized family conference calls where we all got together and decided, okay, this is going to be your job, this is going to be your job. My dad's job was to talk to the police and deal with them. Alex was putting together flyers. I was contacting people in the media because I'm a voice actor. So I have an agent, and I have, you know, show business contacts, so I was able to contact the media. So that was my job. And so this is what we did. We had conference calls every day, and we talked about what we were doing to try and find her. Matt was supposed to go knock on neighbors' doors and ask if they saw anything. He did not do that until I went out personally and went with him, with, you know, my boyfriend in tow, at which point he threatened him with a gun. That was lovely. Hi, I've never met you before. You're my sister-in-law's boyfriend. Let me point a gun at you. Anyway, Alex put up flyers all over the neighborhood. Matt took them down, except for the two that were right next to where we found her body.
How far did you find the body from the house?
What am I getting? I'm sorry, Susan,
How far was the body found from the house?
Less than a mile. It was up at the top of the subdivision where they lived. It was at the entrance to the subdivision.
And what was the body like when you approached it?
She was covered with leaves, I actually didn't find her myself. One of Nikki's coworkers found her, and she screamed, and I came running.
Was she clothed or unclothed?
No, she was naked. She was completely nude. She had nothing
was there anything on her at all. Was there anything in the surrounding area?
No, I mean, just she was just covered with leaves. And then, like I said, that right in front of where she was, right in front of the wooded area where she was the only flyer that Matthew had not taken down.
Was there was it the subdivision sign that was right there too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're right by the subdivision. That's the biggest F you have ever heard, Denny. How does a naked body put leaves on themselves? Where are the clothes, and how do they get there? And then you're right by the opening of the subdivision where the sign is.
Yeah. And their clothes were never found, am I correct?
Nope. They never found any clothes or any of her personal effects.
And you didn't identify, the husband, Denny, doesn't identify the body.
He wasn't even there. He was holed up in the house with his lawyer.
With his lawyer. Okay, so a search party organized by the family actually found the body. It wasn't a police discovery. It was the family effort.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the police, I don't want to say they didn't do anything to try and find her when we reported her missing, but they didn't do much. They called hospitals. They called shelters. And beyond that, they said, well, there's really not much else we can do. They wouldn't even try and put it on the news, because when I tried to contact the news to get it, you know, get the story out that she was missing, the news station said, well, you know, if it comes from the police, then we can run the story, but otherwise we can't. And so we called the detective and said, can you guys please do this? And they're like, no, we're not going to do that.
Well, so what did they establish then, a cause and manner of death or no?
No, they were not able to. The medical examiner ran a thorough report, and they were unable to rule out asphyxiation or strangulation. But because she was so decomposed, when we found her, they weren't able to determine definitively if she was strangled or if she was asphyxiated in some other manner.
Because the weather outside, though, Jenny, the weather, I think, is that why she was so decomposed? Because the weather, it was the hottest week in Atlanta.
Yeah, it was the hottest week of the year, and, you know, and she was covered with leaves. I mean, you know, if you want to decomp something, you know, cover it up with dead leaves.
But it is treated as a homicide, right? I mean, it's not undetermined. They're treating it as a homicide?
The death certificate reads unknown or undetermined manner of death, but the police are treating it as a homicide investigation, as far as I know. But, yeah, her death certificate reads unknown.
Well, usually I'm just trying to think. I don't have a death certificate handy to look at, but there usually is a cause of death, which could be natural causes, suicide, homicide, et cetera, and then a manner of death, which is the specific means of death. Are they both undetermined? Do you know?
Yes, they were both. They said they were both undetermined, and the medical examiner's report read that because they were unable to determine the cause, they could not definitively say that the manner was homicide, but because of the way her body was found, it was definitely highly suspicious for homicidal violence. That's what the full report from the ME read. Yes, her death certificate has unknown under both cause and manner of death.
Highly suspicious. I would say that's highly suspicious. Found covered with thieves, naked. Suspicious circumstances, Susan, wouldn't you agree?
I would, plus the photo a month before. Is that the only photo of the beating that you have of her, or are there more?
That's the only one I have. She texted me that photo, like, a few days after it happened.
Okay, and did you show that to police? Because it looked like she got stitched.
Oh, yes.
And they didn't think, even though she went missing, that it was a big deal that this had come from her phone to you. And what, do you remember, was there a caption or a message with the phone on the photo of her being beaten?
Yeah, I mean, she had talked to me on the phone earlier that day. Like, she told me the story about what she and Matthew were saying had happened. They went to Savannah for the weekend, and she said that they had gone on a Segway tour and that he knocked her off her Segway and she hit the pavement by accident, and that's what happened to her face. And Matthew maintains that that's what happened, is that that's how her face got all torn up, was that she fell off her Segway.
Boy, it's pretty clear, though.
Why then would she text me the picture? You know, why send the picture to me? That seems like
a very
clear...
Well, it's only in one area. She came off of one of those Segway peed things that are like motorcycles. It wouldn't be where her lip is. The injuries are such that she didn't fall down.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not like her face like scraped against pavement. It looks more like somebody punched her.
Yeah, like a fist.
Yeah.
And then the lip had to be sewn.
I mean,
So Denny, you know, this guy is just, I mean, he's gotten away with so much. And again, he gets to leave the state with the kids.
Yeah, I'm wondering, ladies, did you get any feedback or anything? Because apparently at some point he became a suspect, which would be obvious, I would say, that he was should be considered. Do you know what his degree of cooperation was? Did he take a polygraph? Do you know anything about what the police did with him or how he responded to the investigation?
Absolutely no cooperation at all. The only time he even spoke to the police was when he filled out the missing persons report that he filled out originally after my dad called. That was the only time that I'm aware of that he even agreed to talk to the police. The police went to his house on Friday, the day before we found her body, and he had already lawyered up and said, no, I'm not going to speak to you and talk to my attorney. And he hasn't talked to the police at all since then.
And he had the lawyer the day before the remains were found.
That's right.
Wow.
And this wasn't his divorce lawyer, was it, by chance? Or was it, do you know if it was a criminal?
It was a criminal lawyer.
Huh. So he needs a criminal lawyer when his poor wife is missing, the mother of his children. He's so much concerned through all these pukes. And it's the same thing. It's the same. I don't know if it's the law enforcement who doesn't get their act together and see what they have to do in these cases. And I know, and again, we have invited Matthew Lally on various shows and continue to do so. But he is going to get caught at some point. He's going to be arrested for this murder. I'm going to see to it. And this case reeks of murder. And I don't understand why, with all the gadgetry that they had, that they didn't bring in a forensics consultant, Denny, like an Al Dressler or someone like that, that could have gone in and pulled everything right away.
Yeah, this is truly an incredible thing. And, you know, if you saw a made-for-TV movie with this plot, you'd say, oh, this could never happen. This is so ridiculous. It's a real poor movie. I mean, it's the type of stuff that you really don't want to believe.
Well, what's that Texas guy that murdered his wives and almost got away with it again? I can't think of his name. I can kind of see the movie and the one wife lived, but it was a made-for-TV movie that nobody would have believed, and
yeah,
that's what happened.
The police give you any idea of where the investigation stands? Is it like, well, it wouldn't be cold this soon, but do they indicate there's any progress or they think something's going to break or anything?
They maintained a lot of vagary with us. Alex, have you heard anything recently?
I haven't heard anything. I was actually saying today that it just seems like it's just gone dead.
You have a right. No, it's not. And you have a right to call every week to get an update. That's your mother.
Yeah.
I know that.
Well, when
Amy,
do call it, Everson won't return my. I have left numerous voicemails. He won't return my phone calls. And when I do
what's
talk
his
to
name?
Him,
what's,
he tries
wait, wait, what? Wait, wait. What's the detective's name?
Detective Everson.
Detective Everson. Why don't you get me his number? And
okay.
Maybe I can get Cheryl McCollum from the cold case unit to call. Or the attorney general, maybe. Or something like that. I mean, I have no problem in Atlanta making some phone calls. I actually go there frequently myself. And maybe they can find out for you, get you an answer. Because that's your mom. Your mom was murdered.
Yeah.
And they need to do their job. And they've allowed a father with two children to leave state across state lines. And we know what happened the last time that happened to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
They're not here anymore. Neither are the children. So living, I mean. And that's what so if they want that not hanging on their head, and I wouldn't be surprised if, I think both of you told me, Amy and Alex, you've had your numbers changed, basically, because he's got some amazing tracking game and things, doesn't he, Matthew?
He does, yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
and so you've had to do some things just so that he kind of can't track you guys.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually relieved at one point during the visitation hearings that I figured out that Matthew was still under the impression that I lived at my dad's house, because I went through a divorce myself last year, and so I for a time lived at my dad's house. So there were things that were in his questionnaire that his lawyer sent to my dad's lawyer that indicated to me that he still thought I lived there. And that was actually comforting to me, because I was like, oh good, he doesn't know where I live.
I know, I was really creeped out because my mom had co-signed my apartment that I moved into for the past year. And so she had the address and all of that at home of where I was living for my new apartment, like to the apartment number. And I lived there after the fact. And I know there were numerous nights where I felt uncomfortable and worried and freaked out because I knew he knew where I lived. I've now moved out of there, and I can't tell you how much more comfortable I feel because I, you know, and he doesn't know where my current location is.
Have you heard from him at all since he's moved to Vermont with the girl?
No.
Or New Hampshire. He might be in New Hampshire, Vermont, around that area. Does he have family up there?
He has family.
Yeah.
He has family in New York, and his Paul's in Vermont, I guess. I don't really know where his brother is.
Yeah, his brother that has been in a mental institution.
Yeah.
That's
neither
here nor
there.
That.
Yeah.
But that really isn't. And I think, though, that what's important is that you're doing a lot of these shows and trying to get the word out so that the police just do their job. Wrap up the investigation and make the proper arrest. It's not that hard. It's not brain surgery.
Right.
You know, Lady Susan mentioned a little bit earlier about a possible wrongful death suit. And I remember that always sticks in my mind from the O.J. Simpson case, where the Goldman family, after O.J. was acquitted in the criminal trial, they with the civil action. Have you contemplated that at all to get Matthew in and get him under oath and deposed?
Amy.
Well, I would not have in Georgia the. It's tricky who has the right to actually bring that kind of suit. I think Alex would be the only one that could. I don't actually have the right to bring the suit.
You both do. You both can do that. You can enjoin it, and it would be all right. Well, Drew Peterson, Kathleen Savio's family, has filed a wrongful death against him. There's a lot of cases where they go in and do that, regardless of where the police investigation is or is not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a consideration, and maybe I can try to find a lawyer for you to do that.
Yeah, and you have to be very diligent with the time frame, because if whatever the statute
2 years.
Is, yeah, it's 2 years. Well, you got time then, but it goes by quickly. And you know, we found, Susan, I think you'll agree with me, in a lot of the cases where by the time the family comes to grips with the fact that the investigation is not going as smoothly, there's not being as much done as they had thought, a lot of times that limitation has already expired by the time they think, holy mackerel, you know, the cops really aren't doing much here. maybe we should try to do something. And then they find that they've lost some of their options because a couple of years have gone by, you know, before they come to the realization that perhaps the police aren't making the headway they should. So it is important to keep tabs on where you stand from that aspect of it.
That's very important.
Yeah, something definitely that, you know, we will consider.
And again, you know, it's tough because you haven't been able to see your sisters, have you, Alex?
No, I haven't at all. Like, I have not. I saw them a few times after her death because they were with my grandparents, and then my rights got taken away because I was too mouthy with media, basically.
Whoa. Say this one more time. Your rights were taken away?
Yeah, I was able to visit with them while my grandparents had them. Like, I had the right to be there. And we went to court for, you know, more visitation. And they took my rights. The judge said that my relationship with Matt was our relationship was too damaged and it wasn't fixable. And that because of my relationship with him, it wasn't healthy for me to be around the kids. And he said, for the time being, you are not allowed to be there for visitation. And, you know, he said, because of, you know, you have said hurtful things towards their father on Facebook and other media websites, and because of that, it's not healthy for you to be around your sisters. And I have not been able to see them since the judge made that ruling.
When was the ruling?
In Gwinnett County.
When was it?
Amy, when was it?
December.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like a copy of that. Give me a copy of that. That's ridiculous.
Yep.
You can't punish somebody for wanting justice. Please get me that right away. That's ridiculous.
I will.
And the judge
I've been completely restricted from seeing them from the get-go. I have only
No, you don't count. I don't mean it like that, but you don't for a minute. It's the daughter. How dare he do that?
I understand. Yeah.
I don't mean to discount or disrespect that with you. I'm just saying that how dare a judge do that to Nikki's daughter? She has no right to dictate to her to say she's making too much of this because she wants justice. I want the name of the judge, too. No, don't say it in the air. I'll take care of it. That's ridiculous. Really beyond ridiculous.
Susan,
I agree with you, Susan. I agree with you completely.
I was appalled when he made that ruling. He looked at me and he said, you know, no offense to you, Alex, but I feel this is best. And I just was appalled and disgusted because I was amazed that a judge found it fit to take away the only other female figure in their life away. Like, I just was appalled.
Susan, am I correct that I believe I've heard of cases before of visitation issues where there's a dispute and the courts have come down and said, okay, you know, we don't want the bad blood between the parties to be conveyed to the children, so we will have here's the ground rules, what you can and can't talk about, topics that are off the table, and the visit can be supervised. In other words, we could have someone there to make sure it doesn't turn into a bashing session one way or the other.
And it wouldn't. You know what? That guy was out of line. And let me say something else. This person got to take the kids out of state. And he violated the orders and the documents by the judge that the grandparents had visitation. They haven't been able to see the kids since. So being able to take the children out of state when you are a suspect in a murder case, I don't know. What does that tell you?
Oh, man, the more I hear about this whole thing, the more frustrated I get, because it just, like I say, it makes the hair in the back of my neck rise.
You don't have much hair back there anyway, Denny, but
hey,
I'm just saying. This is an intimate partner homicide case that was made to look like a missing persons. It was not. We see these time and time again. Yes, a person is innocent until proven guilty, but there's so much that he was doing. There's so much that he was controlling, Matthew. And it's homicide. And somebody's got to get off their derriere in Gwinnett County and treat this case as a homicide, and do the right thing and investigate it correctly, which they're not doing.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
The probable cause issue, it seems, from everything I've heard, that there was ample reason to believe.
She has no way to leave the house. She has no way to be unclothed like that. She's supposed to be at work. Nobody knows what happens to her. It is not possible. She didn't just up and leave. Her car was still there. Her keys were there. Her bra, her items. Everything was there. So how is she leaving naked with no clothes?
Well, one thing the medical examiner made a comment on was that the bottom, like he made it a point to make a comment that the bottom of her feet were clean when she was found, making
okay.
a point that she didn't walk.
She was carried.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So we got clean feet by the ME saying clean feet, Denny.
Yeah, I you know, again, I'm just puzzled. I'm baffled about this thing. It seems so clear to me. I'm just wrestling with where the doubt is or where the weaknesses are. Like I say, again, it's not a conviction, but probable cause that this guy, to believe that this guy did it. You know, that
well,
it was homicide.
He knows the area. So how does she get to the beginning of where the sign is to their complex? And like right there below where the one of the signs that Alex puts there that she's missing. That's not possible. She was carried to the location. And, you know, obviously they had a fight. Obviously things went wrong. Obviously he got angry. And, again, because he had a lawyer, they did not question him. That's not acceptable. Because the lawyer was in the house, he didn't even ID the body. Her sister had to ID the pink toenails. That's how they knew who it was, by her pink toenails. And then what happened? Real quick, Alex, talk about the funeral and how you had to fight for the body and that you had to go to court for the remains. Talk about that.
Yeah, I had to go to court too. You know, he wanted to have his own funeral. He wanted to exclude the family. I know Amy talked to the funeral home, the Tom Wages funeral home that he wanted to use. And, you know, they told her that, you know, he didn't want anything to do with the family. He didn't want the family to have anything to do with it. And I had to go to court and fight for her remains just so that our family could put what was left of her to rest. And, I mean, I won the case. He just gave up. But, you know, I had to go to court to fight for my mom's body.
That in itself
is just disgusting.
Quick question before we run out of time. He doesn't work. Matthew doesn't work or wasn't working at the time. Was there any insurance money involved? Did Nikki have any insurance that he'd have gotten, any insurance payment?
Nikki had over $1 million in life insurance policies.
Any of it go to him?
We don't actually know. At the moment, I don't think that any of the policies have paid out. But, I mean...
Let's make sure that they don't. Give me the insurance company's information. We're out of time.
Okay. Thank you guys so much.
Our director of research, Kim Colton, and public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com. Our next show will be May 1st, 2012. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes, interrupt, and wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice.
Thank you for joining us tonight in Crime Wire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guests. If you would like your case to be featured on Crime Wire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. To hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com, turn on the volume at your computer, and the show will automatically play. Remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard when there is nowhere else to turn. This is our website, www.crimewiresite.com. God bless from the Crime Wire team, Denny Griffin and Susan Murphy Milano. Thank you and good night. And thank you, Alex. And
thank you.
Do you know what, guys? Get me all of that stuff. I'm going to town. I am. I mean, there's no reason for this. Anything that you can think of, document something, a paperwork, insurance, anything that you can think of, I want. Just email it to me, okay? Please.
Okay.
I'm on the road till next Thursday, but I'll take care of it as soon as I get back. I'd love to see what we can do.
Okay, great. We'll do.
Any more?
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you later.
Thanks,
thank you, guys.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.